How does he feel about that?
And just like that, that's how we start this week's Game of Owns episode. I'm Zach Louie. I'm your host for this episode, and that means that between the five of us, I'm the one who decided to speak up the most in our pre-documenting conversationing on Skype chat. Welcome, everyone. We are officially now the iTunes new and noteworthy Game of Owns.
Woo!
Yeah, and we can't mention something else. So, everyone's back. And by everyone, I mean Terrence and Selena are joining us, which is excellent. So, shall we just go around again and refresh the people that may be listening for the first time who everyone is?
Sure. I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
I'm Terrence Pinkston.
And I'm Selena Wilkin.
Miss Selena, you had to miss last week because you were doing something important. And by important, I mean probably more important than this, which was just recording this episode. Why don't you tell us all about it?
Yeah, well, I'm sorry that I couldn't hang out with you guys, but I was busy in Bath with George R.R. Martin.
How'd that go?
Oh, yeah.
Score. Well, did you get his number?
No. Oh, God.
She got more than
how
his
do
number.
I recount?
You think, you think one would come after the other?
It really was... a memorable, you know, time in Bath with George R.R. Martin. no, it was really good. You know, while we were in Bath, he did actually lots of people in Bath with us.
Wow.
It was a whole big thing.
Was it bubble bath?
Oh, yeah.
Is it safe to say it was like a swimming pool, maybe?
It was the size of a swimming pool, yeah. It wasn't. No, it was actually in a church.
It's a group baptism.
This just keeps getting better.
And it started with a prayer, and and I just remember thinking that was really strange because, you know, George R. R. Martin, all his religions and Game of Thrones.
Were you burning any false idols and declaring your allegiance for the God of
Light?
Well,
I felt like that probably would have been a bit inappropriate, but it was actually really good. He talked about, he didn't really say a lot of new stuff, but it was great just to see him in real life. And, you know, he really does look like a sailor, which is cool. I love, like, you know, seeing him in interviews and stuff. He mainly just talked, I should probably explain just in case people are really confused. He was at a reading in this place in England called Bath. I know you guys are all really disappointed now. I'm sorry.
Right.
But yeah, and he answered a bunch of audience questions, and it was really kind of annoying because they all asked him about Lord of the Rings. And I'm like, we already know that he's compared to Lord of the Rings, so, you know, just get over it. But he did also do a short reading from The Winds of Winter, which was really cool.
That's
awesome. I'm not gonna spoil anything for you guys. I'll just say that the final line of the reading was, I see dragons.
Oh.
And interpret that the way you will. So, oh no, it was really cool. I mean, we just started this Game of Thrones podcast, and then I got to see George R. R. Martin. Sadly, I didn't get to speak to him, otherwise I totally would have plugged this.
Speaking of, okay, so the episode now, is Peter Dinklage still the main star? Did he continue his awesome from the season 2 premiere into this second episode?
Oh hell yeah!
I
agree.
Are you asking that because you didn't watch the episode again,
Eric?
No, I absolutely did watch the episode.
Eric did not watch it this week, did he?
I did. And considering the proximity of when we're releasing this episode, based on when it airs, I think that case could be made.
What are you getting at?
What are you getting at, Eric?
Nothing. I've seen the episode, loved it, and let me just say, guys, Micah and Zach, this is to you specifically because you were on last week's episode, but you guys kept your calm. You were so collected when I was talking about Craster opening up a bed and breakfast for White Walkers to come in, sleep with his daughters to appease the White Walkers and prevent a war. You were so collected. But then, of course, at the end of this episode this week, we learned something huge about them. And you guys were like, no big deal, no big deal. Last week
I
you let me
the
go
term
on
was
thinking.
Ice fuck, wasn't it?
Ice fuck is what it was.
Wow.
But you know what's funny about that big reveal is that I don't know about you, Micah, but I don't think that ever was explained in the book.
I'm trying to remember now. Because I've read Clash of Kings such a long time ago that
yeah,
it's not jumping out at me though. I don't remember that specifically.
They're breeding them into new ice people.
Well, that's what
I'm pretty sure we're just left lit to the imagination in the book, so it's interesting there.
I just assumed, and Selena, what I was saying last week, I just assumed anything with the White Walkers was super relevant, because I was complaining that the last time we had seen them was pretty much like in the pilot of the first season. We seemed to learn a lot about them then, but there was like nothing ever since, and I was like, okay, what about this threat beyond the wall, you know? So that was my big deal with it.
I'm reading A Clash of Kings right now, and just unless I haven't gotten to that part, I don't remember that in the book at all.
See, that is so interesting because, yeah, like in the book, I'm pretty sure they just sort of leave it with, oh, we assume that the White Walkers eat the babies. But here they sort of made it a point that the White Walkers take the babies away. So if they consulted George R.R. Martin on that, which they probably did, I wonder if that's going to have some kind of, like we're going to learn in a later book, a much later book, that those babies actually grow up to be some kind of, I don't know, warriors? Or...
I'm assuming.
Because we assume the White Walkers are like zombie type people.
Right.
Well, it definitely makes sense though now as to why he's able to keep the White Walkers at bay from invading his home because he's providing them with all of his sons.
Yeah, but if you think about it though, it's probably definitely above... It's probably definitely more than just, hey, I'm going to feed you these small children, because if they wanted them enough, they would just storm the keep and eat every person.
Well, they had no problem killing babies at the end of the first episode, so
exactly.
Why don't they do it this one? I mean, what's going to happen in the third episode? It's just becoming this trend of baby killing at the end of each episode.
Right? Oh, gosh. Didn't they say that, though? Didn't they say there was going to be like 10 times more baby killing in this season? Wasn't that one of the promos?
That was the tagline of this season, wasn't it?
Infanticide. It was like,
10 times more baby killing.
Infanticide.
What would a White Walker want with a baby? Wow, try saying that 5 times fast. But what would a White Walker want with a baby?
Nothing seriously. Not devious, I'm sure.
Nothing devious.
Either they're building an army, or I just assumed it was part of the magic. You know, you need like to make their evil ritual society live. They need to sacrifice.
They should just take Power Thirst and spawn 400 babies. It'd be so much faster.
God, I don't know, because we've seen a child White Walker before, haven't we? That girl. But baby, you can't imagine that baby walkers would be.
It's
that
like
effective.
Breaking Dawn. You know what I'm saying?
Can you see them crawling across the thing?
Yeah. Well, like that girl.
It is like Breaking
that
Dawn.
Girl in the episode. I didn't know if she was a White Walker, or if she was like a human girl that had died and was like now being possessed. Like with.
I think that's the same thing.
Like the same thing.
Probably about the same thing.
Is it?
I think so. Yeah.
The question that I have is: doesn't that make Crasher a much more sympathetic character? Like. Don't you feel bad for him now? Why? Because he bruised Jon Snow's face at the end?
No, I do. I feel...
No, he's given away sons. I mean, he's given away the sons of his... Essentially, the sons of his daughters away to these White Walkers. And from what we know from the White Walkers, even from last season, they're nothing but murderous, raving
lunatics. Yeah, but Craster could be having...
Yeah, Craster is an...
He could be having all of these kids, and it could be his... I don't know, like, his only way to fight is to... do something really terrible and wrong to keep the rest of his family alive. You see what I'm saying?
But Craster is just like an inbreeding crap face.
Okay, but like, you know, say no somebody comes to you and says, I'm going to kill you right now, or you survive and you provide an army. You know, I'm sure he's just trying to stay alive. Because, like, stuff is crazy outside of the wall.
Yeah, man.
You know, north of the wall, like, anything goes. There's White Walkers. I I'm not saying he's totally, you know... absolved of any blame, because he's causing some serious trouble to like his daughters, you know, mentally and otherwise. But I'm saying, like, I can totally see a situation where the White Walkers have given him this option. He's found a way to appease them. He's found a way to kind of stay alive, and he's given them essentially a fresh supply. Although it sounds disgusting to say that, of kids, you know, of young boys, it's terrible. But I'm wondering, like. I was so enthralled by the end of the episode because I was like, oh, snap, what are the White Walkers doing? Because I missed them.
I don't think he has to stay there, though. You're making it seem like he has to stay beyond the wall. He can move anywhere he wants to, and he'd be much safer than he is now.
Do you think that the White Walkers would let him move since they would no longer have their supply of fresh young boys?
Just go during the day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Craster seems so much more content up there than he would be in the South. Just from general observation. But I mean, he has all of these women.
They're his daughters
at his disposal. You know, he has his own little keep. He has his own little village, and you know, what more could you want? You know, it's like owning a piece of land, raising
and
your
then
family,
sleeping with your family. Perfect. Perfect.
Well, I think of what the girl said in the first episode. You know, the girl was like, "Father does this. It's for our protection, for our safety." And it's like she really believes that, but she seemed like she'd been indoctrinated. Like he's telling them, "Oh, it's for your safety." So he must really believe it. But right. I don't spend too much time on it. But yeah,
it's horrible.
It's bad. But then. I'm worried about Jon Snow. I hope that doesn't leave a mark.
I think what we're seeing is definitely the case of someone who is probably began more of like, oh my God, this is so sad. This is a terrible thing that's happening to me. And then eventually just settled into it and just started sleeping with countless women and giving birth to sons that he didn't care about and feeding them to people he didn't care about even more. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's just a vicious cycle that he's a part of that it just doesn't really care to fix and has kind of turned him into a villain.
Yeah.
I mean, and he is a wildling, too, so that might be why he chooses to live beyond the wall and not go any further.
Right.
He's just sympathetic to the Night's Watch for some reason.
But, of course, we did get to meet in this episode his daughter, Gilly. And we had our first interaction between Gilly, John, and
I love the entire first scene with her and Sam and how timid he was. Just so timid.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
She told him that he was brave, which I thought was a really nice sort of opening scene.
It was good to establish the connection between that character and obviously him. But I really loved when the trifecta came together and they had their first conversation and John was just so dismissive and he was like, "Yeah, Sam, who is this?" And he's like, "Hey, this is a girl I found." He's like, "Yeah, Sam, I see it's a girl. Why is she standing here?" You know what I mean? Like, I just love that entire scene. It was such a great exchange.
And then Sam goes, "I didn't touch her." And then John goes, "No, you only wanted her."
Yeah, no, I thought that was a really good setup, especially, you know, considering how sort of what it's setting up, I should say. God, it's really hard not to spoil.
You really start to see the change in Sam, too. Like, when he's interacting with Ghost, the fact that he can control Ghost and this huge direwolf and tell him exactly what to do and he listens. I mean, that's just a sort of a character building moment, and we kind of see him, you know, develop as the season goes on. But I just thought that was a cool scene. And Ghost, man, he's been eating his
puppy
chow too.
It was so good to see Ghost.
Huge.
He was not small. He was larger than most things. I don't think he was exactly the same size as Rob's, though. I think he might have been just a tad smaller, as usual, though.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask, Terrence and Selena, because you guys weren't on the last episode, before we really get into the Nightlands, what was your overall impressions of the season premiere?
Oh, gosh. whenever we left last season, I mean, everything was kind of building up, and then all hell finally broke loose, and then, like, the last two episodes were just... I mean, all guns blazing, going all out. But whenever we come back in and settle in for the second season, what happens is you kind of get into that rhythmic pace that, okay, you have to get back into this rhythmic pace, which the writers have been very good at doing, even last season. You know, they know the kind of story that they want to tell, and they know exactly where they want to play certain events and things like that, just to keep the episodes flowing. And I felt like coming into this episode, it started out a bit slow for me because I was used to that, that fast-pacedness of the ending of last season. And my initial reactions to the episode weren't really positive at all. I was kind of like, wow, that's it? All the news and all the promos and everything. I guess I had overhyped myself with it a little bit, but... as I have sat down, a little bit more this past week and watched it a couple more times and then watched this new episode that came out, I found that it was a lot. I was starting to get used to that pace again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny that you say that because when I first watched it, like, I really enjoyed the first episode, but I thought some of the scenes, like the scenes at King's Landing, not the delivery of the lines weren't bad, but the pacing seemed strange to me. Like it was so strange when I watched some of the scenes. Like the acting was so good, but it was like there was too much pause between the lines. It was very strange. But then once you got beyond that, it was just awesome, and I really enjoyed, you know, seeing Tyrion make his grand entrance and getting our first, you know, sort of proper look at Tommen and Myrcella. And
it was beautiful. It was.
I loved
really
it. I was so back into it.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, watching it back though, like, I noticed, Zach, what you were talking about, where they did a really great job of using the comet to connect all the different characters throughout the world. Like, I didn't notice that the first time I watched it. I watched it back last night. It was just really cool how they were able to do that.
It's supposed to be just the mechanic is supposed to be like a passive form of filmmaking and storytelling where you don't quite notice it. Like, you wouldn't take away from it, but me being geeky and I like being my job, I would see it. And I just thought that it was a really natural thing that they did, because that's something that is in the book and is part of the story. And it's just like, not only is this happening in the opening episode, of it, it's just the way they did it was perfect. They used it in a series premiere to establish all the different portions of the kingdom. Like, if that right there doesn't win them some awards for how they did, how they used that as a mechanic for filmmaking and for story, I'll be very shocked.
Yeah.
It'll win for best guest star.
Right.
The comet.
It was good.
I think as my final comment for episode one, I think now we're starting to realize, where the characters are starting to realize the effects of Ned Stark's death. You know, last season of what, we only had a full episode, really, of the reaction to Ned Stark's death. And that was mainly, we saw his family, and then, you know, all hell kind of breaks loose with that. But now we're kind of seeing, you know, Tyrion go telling Cersei that, well, you know, you had three Starks, now you only have one. And
right.
You know, that was kind of an oh shit moment for her.
No, one thing that that I did notice though with both these episodes was that I feel like, and I again, it's been a while since I read Clash of Kings, but I feel like they're really pushing things faster than I was expecting. Like they're developing some of these storylines sort of ahead of what they should be narratively in the book.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this on our opening episode, but we're probably dealing with the direct fact that they're trying to create an arc that for each character that makes sense chronologically with the way they're rewriting for the series outside of the structure of the book.
Because, like, for example, this week with Arya's storyline, I could have sworn that she didn't tell, like, that Gendry didn't find out that she was a Stark until much later in the
story. I assume so.
But then it just makes sense that, you know, he finds out now. So.
Yeah, it's just a way for them to create more of a, you know, a fervor with inside of the story that, you know, not that long sort of payoff that's just like, hey, by the way, I'm Arya Stark.
Yeah.
Like, there's plenty of long payoffs. They don't want to litter the whole show with them, you know what I mean? In this episode, much like in last week's episode, we are sort of introduced with a moment where Tyrion, and by sort of, I mean definitely, imp slaps another human being. But in this episode, he imp slaps, I think, two. I think our count is at two people. Am I right here?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
All right. First of which being when he walks into his bedroom. And can we just make a comment on how sweet as hell Tyrion's bedroom is? His entire housing situation is pretty awesome. Can I get an agreement?
I don't know. I think his house looked pretty small.
Yeah, it was a little bit
small.
Well,
to him, it looks big.
I'm just saying, I think it was probably small. I think they were counting on that. They were like, we're going to give him the smallest quarters in the castle.
That's terrible. No. You walked in and you can see the winds. You can see the beauty outside of King's Landing. I think it's awesome.
How many views like that do you think there are in King's Landing, though?
Well, he is the Hand of the King right now, so he is in the same bedroom that Ned Stark was
in. Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, think about it this way. You are in this society where some people are dying because they can't afford bread. And so when you're walking to this fancy place and you've got like a plate of grapes and cheese laid out, like you are, he is where it's at. Like that's nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he's a Lannister. So.
That's what I'm saying. I'm just really jealous of his bedroom. So he walks into his bedroom.
Yeah.
He sees this lady who he's brought out of poverty and blah, blah, blah. You know, she's traveling around hanging out with the alpha people. And,
you know, I find her annoying.
Yeah. She deserves to not be around anyone ever. But he walks up to the table, and she's sitting there having a conversation with Mr. Eunuch here, What do you guys think about that? Because when I saw this happen, I was like, ah, you know what? Here it comes. Here comes the vicious cycle of the hand of the king getting slowly usurped and getting stabbed with a knife or cut with a knife. You know what I mean?
I didn't think anything about that. I was just worried for his lady friend. You know, I didn't think she was too special, but he's got a soft spot for her. So I, as the viewer, want to have a soft spot for her. And I just thought, oh, great. Now that somebody knows of her existence, because she wasn't supposed to open the door for anybody. Previous episode, Tyrion was like, bitch, do not open the door for anybody. And clearly she did.
Yeah, she's stupid.
Yeah, clearly she let this guy in. Now that he knows about her.
Who said
and he's like, oh, it's so nice that you have, you know, this connection and that you met when you were young and all that stuff. But he's like, really, he's just talking about, wow, I'm going to use this bit of information to my complete favor and have her killed when it will best suit me. You know?
But is it stated she opened the door?
I don't know how else he would have gotten into the room unless he's a climber.
He could be really proficient at picking locks, though.
Maybe he disguised himself as Mr. Clean and was like, yeah, I'm the cleaning guy.
I bet he's a eunuch, I bet he's really good with his hands.
Pine Sol.
He's definitely, like, weaseling his way into, you know, Tyrion's sort of safe space to best take advantage of him, because he is the master manipulator.
But, man, Tyrion was, like, having none of it. He was like, I do not take threats well. You know, you do not threaten me.
He was so pissed.
Yeah, he was angry.
Well, I was kind of wondering, what did Shay tell him, really? I mean, we don't know what they were talking about. I mean, sure, you can say, oh...
The problem with Shay, and the reason I was really bothered when it all happened, is because, you know, we know that inherently she is a very shady person as well, and I think that we may be adding someone else to the ring of who's playing the Game of Thrones super well. And if she's cohorting with people like Mr. Unicide, Mr. Eunuch, I can think of many names for him before the course of this episode's over, but if she's playing games with him, this could be a very terrible thing, because we know that Tyrion is probably one of the smartest people in the Seven Kingdoms, but at the same time, he's also got a little bit too much honor to his own family and to, you know, formalities and things like that to really be vicious. So he's got a friend that sees no use for formalities. She's very, I'm trying to think of the word here, you know, like, what is it, like Dionysian?
When you just say she's innocent, I mean, like,
no,
in
she's
the way
not.
That
she's
it's
not
like,
innocent at all.
No, she is not innocent. Yeah. She's a whore. She's
okay. Smite her. Smite her for her sins.
No, that's exactly what she is. She's a whore with.
Okay, I'm saying though, Tyrion is the smartest. This, you know, one of the smartest characters in the Seven Kingdoms, as Zach just said. This girl is not smart, and she lets this guy in.
No, she is smart though.
He's not supposed, but he's not supposed to know she's there, and. That was, you know, strict orders. But basically, by associating himself with her, Tyrion makes himself weaker.
That's true, but keep in mind, Eric, Tyrion is smart enough not to have someone around that closely that he doesn't feel is on the same intellectual level as him.
Well, I think that we're definitely going to see that Tyrion's soft spot for Shay is going to be a problem, because, you know, if he didn't have a soft spot for Shay, he'd basically be untouchable. But because he does care about her, and because Varys has found her, I think that is going to work to his disadvantage, because he has something to lose.
Right.
Well, Tyrion gets too attached emotionally. I mean, if you remember, think back to last season when he was sitting there with Shay and they were playing that drinking game, kind of, and he told them exactly what had happened with his first time.
Exactly.
And that whole sham behind that. And then he got really, really angry and really pissed. But that's kind of one of his qualities, though. He cares. He cares about people.
Well, yeah, I think you see that later on, too, in this episode, where he's talking with Jon O'Slynt. And he's basically, I don't know, I think you see it there. And then you also see it when he's talking with Bronn. You know, when he asks him the question, you know, if I told you to go and kill an innocent child, would you do it? And Bronn responds by saying, I'd ask how much or something. But you can tell there's actual emotion in Tyrion. You know, the reason why he sends Slint off to the Night's Watch is because he can't believe what this guy has done. You know, he went out and he killed these innocent children. And I think you see a lot of that from him throughout the series, and that's why he's such a redeemable character, why people are drawn to him.
Mm-hmm. That's why we love him,
Do we think that Tyrion has some sense
of honor?
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think he has the most honor out of, like, every character.
I'll give you that, yeah. That entire scene with Lord Slint was really great. Like I said, it was another one of his sort of owning moments where he began the conversation, you know, obviously patting the person, saying all these nice things, making the person comfortable, giving him all these props, and then slowly working him into saying, when he finally tells Slint, he goes, hey, like, how could I buy your honor? You don't have any honor at all, or something like that.
He says, I'm not questioning your honor. I'm questioning
yes, something. It was a really yes. great one-liner. And it was, if you watch closely, you can just see the complete swagger that Peter Dinklage portrayed within Tyrion, because he acted as if, listen, I know this guy could swing his dagger at my face right now, but I'm just going to pretend like he isn't. So he didn't flinch at him erupting and banging around on the table, and he didn't flinch when he was called an imp, and he didn't flinch when he was called a dwarf. He held his composure the entire time.
You should have stopped at imp.
Right. And then he invites Bronn out, and they send him off to the Night Watch. Perfect, perfect. He doesn't kill him. He doesn't do anything stupid. He just makes him swear fealty to a giant magical wall and the fact that there'll be no women around for a while.
Yeah, and I think he really doesn't like betrayal, because he specifically brings up Ned Stark in that conversation with Slint, and you know, he asks him, did you know something about him being already bought before, like, he wouldn't be bought by, what was the line, why didn't you tell Ned Stark that you had already been bought off by my sister, or something along those lines?
Right. He's saying he was mad at Tyrion for assuming that he could buy his loyalty, and he goes, "How can I buy it? It's already been bought."
Right. Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
I love that scene, is also because I really think under different circumstances Tyrion and Ned Stark would have been, like, you know, best friends basically, because they both, even though they're very different, obviously. They both had the same sense of morals, and the same sense that, you know, they weren't just selfishly exploiting everyone around them. They have a sense of right and wrong. So I think now that Ned's gone, Tyrion is pretty much the only one left who we're sure isn't out for himself.
Well, we have, there's Robb Stark, or there's always Jon Snow, which is another reason why Tyrion and Jon,
they get along
so well. But yeah, geographically, he's out of the story. He doesn't matter.
Yeah.
There was a great line about that, too, which you were just saying, Selena. Tyrion said Ned Stark was a man of honor. It was said that Ned Stark was a man of honor, and Tyrion goes, and I am not. Threaten me again, and I will have you thrown in.
Tyrion just owned all throughout this episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, should be called Tyrion of Owns.
Tyrion of Owns.
The real problem I had, and you know, we're talking about Tyrion imp-slapping the different people throughout this, but he gets slapped himself by Cersei in this episode, and it was so hard to watch. But basically, you know, after she recounts the story of, you know, basically his birth, she leaves. She's angry. You know, it's been a heated conversation. She tells him what was, you know, she calls it the first joke that he told. She said, "You're so funny. You're so funny. Here's the first joke you told." She leaves, and he's just silent. He was hurting. She really made him hurt in this episode by doing that to him. And I just, you know, it really endears you towards Tyrion, because you really, you know, just feel for him. And you're angry at all the other people who are against him.
Yeah.
I have a question for you guys. Are you able to find sympathy for Cersei?
I had it a little bit in the first episode of this season, and you know, in fact, right until she attacked Baelish or whatever, I was just like, wow, you know, she's bad, or I feel bad for her. And then in this episode too, but again, she just ruined it, you know, before she got back at Tyrion. So yeah, I find myself surprisingly having sympathy for her, at least a little bit each episode.
The only sympathy I had for Cersei is whenever she was with Robert, because Robert really didn't treat her all too well. And I think that's kind of set the wheels in her head in motion as to what she wanted to do later on in that particular season, because she had been so mistreated about Robert. I remember one scene totally stuck in my head, and this is where I really felt sorry for her. It was on their wedding night, and she said that Robert had gotten drunk, you know, drank so much wine, but he crawled on top of her, did what little he could do, and then at the same time, he says Leanna's name. Yeah. And that kind of...
Classic mistake, bro. Classic mistake.
Hey, girl, you're married to the king now. This is how it rolls in Westeros. Yeah. But, like, even that it was revealed, you know, and I was worried about this last week, that Joffrey gave the order to kill the bastards, that it wasn't Cersei, and that she had no knowledge of it. Like, okay, there's some sympathy there, because last season she was pulling all the strings, or, you know, at least the majority of them that came from King's Landing directly. Now, this season, everybody else is, you know, causing things to happen. She's been sidelined.
Yeah, I just lost respect for her, though, when she said that line where basically the biggest joke is that they lost two of their family members because of him. You know, the mother and then Jaime, because essentially they went to war because Tyrion got captured. So he's the reason why these two very important family members to her are now gone. And, you know, to say that he's a joke of a person and that he's not good enough to have, you know, I mean, look, obviously what happened with their mother was an accident, but it's also clear that there's other reasons why she's upset that Jaime's gone.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's true.
Oh, yeah.
But still, to say that kind of thing, to hurt the little man's feelings. Yeah, well, he's her brother. To hurt his feelings, I mean, he took it well, though, I mean, but he didn't have anything to say to that. He was just like, you could tell he was just like, you know, breathing deep, you know, after that to calm himself down. And then he moved on, you know, from it. But it's just like, seriously, it's just like, that was one of the best scenes in this episode.
And you can
for
see
sure.
a real rift in the relationship now, too, between the two of these people.
Well, I think Cersei, like, her sort of fatal flaw is that she holds grudges. You know, she sees herself as above, you know, because she's beautiful and she's powerful. And she's always seen herself as above pretty much everyone around her. And I think that arrogance really sort of ruins her. But I do think that there are moments when I do feel like I find sympathy for her, especially, you know, in this episode when we find out that she, you know, she loves her son Joffrey and she's willing to make all the excuses in the world for him. But at the same time, she would not do what he would do. You know what I mean? Like she's not the one who would have... Right. given the order necessarily to kill all those babies. And I think that's sort of that's significant.
Yeah.
I would feel sorry for her, but it really comes down to her decisions have sort of ran away from her. Her decision to tear up the piece of paper that made Ned King Regent, you know what I mean, or protector of the throne. Her decision to do X amount of things that essentially put Joffrey into power, that, you know, allowed Jaime to push Bran off of the cliff or off of the window, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, has all gotten away from her. And she can't just be this innocent lady that's like, oh, woe is me. All these bad things are happening. My son, he slapped me. He's killing babies. He declared Ned's death, you know, like, it's like, yeah, you can feel sorry for her at the same time. But I mean, at the end of the day, she is a Lannister and
she's a terrible
she's person. Sitting back, she's pulling the string.
No question.
But I think that Tyrion is probably saving, like, he didn't say anything to her when she made the big joke line, because he's probably saving his punchline eventually, which we know that he will definitely pull out at one point, and that will sort of be the insult to end all insults. But essentially, he could just call her out for inbreeding. You know, like,
yeah, that's the line basically that I'm waiting for.
But I'm not sure he would do that, though, because, I mean, again, Tyrion absolutely hates Joffrey, but he common, you know, and he does have that whole, you know, Lannister's family first thing.
It's definitely a conflict to, on the one hand, you know, out his sister for being as horrible a person as she is, and then disgracing his family.
Right.
By furthering that, you know, the knowledge of that disgrace. So it's going to be an interesting conflict for him to try and work out.
Yeah, it's perfect. I think it's Tyrion mentions is what she allowed her son to do to the people. You know, the fact that she allowed the the Night's Watch to go out there. I'm sorry, the... Was it?
Kingsguard.
The Kingsguard, I'm sorry, to go out there and slaughter children throughout the city does not endear her to the people, does not endear King Joffrey to the people. And that's going to be another battle that they're going to have to fight moving forward as well. I mean, you want to do everything in your power with war coming to have the people within King's Landing on your side.
Yeah, it looks as if they're trying to rule by force and not by example. So they're trying to lead with an iron fist, which is, you know, he's pulling up a bunch of the same traits that the Mad King had. And maybe we'll see some sort of a decline the same way that we did for him.
Yeah, but all you hear about is the numbers. You know, Tyrion's talking about numbers. Everybody's talking about how many numbers they have at their command, you know, for their king. We will outnumber King's Landing 2-1, says, you know, Stannis or whoever. You know, just talking about numbers. And if the people of King's Landing aren't on the Lannister side, then the Lannisters have a huge problem. And I think it's only really obvious to Tyrion, you know, can only tell him, he can only say that so many times to Cersei.
Well, they're arrogant. They believe too much of themselves and what their coins can buy.
Well, I think just the other thing is, you know, it's been an episode, maybe an episode and a half since, you know, Tyrion has been appointed Hand of the King. We do need to see more of Tyrion and Joffrey, you know, just kind of more advising and King's affairs, that kind of thing. Even if it's uneasy or even if Joffrey, like, rejects him, like, we need to see more of that.
Absolutely.
Because that's, you know, that's what Tyrion's there to do. And he's kind of just gotten sidetracked so far.
It seems to be a really common theme in this episode that we're dealing with so much, not really treachery on the side of others within their own family, but we see the same thing from Theon when he returns home. And we have an obvious amount of animosity from his father and himself, which is really interesting. And then obviously we have the reveal of his sister, who was his let's say what's the word, like,
partner,
shepherd from the boats to the castle, who he had a very questionable horse ride with that was a little bit more graphic in the show than was in the book.
I love that the series is constantly pushing boundaries of what they can show on TV, even, like, that's pretty much all I have to say for that scene. I mean, he had just gotten some too,
yeah,
you know, on the boat ride over. So I don't know.
Try that smiling with your mouth closed.
Oh my god,
that guy's got stamina.
Oh, that was so bad.
Yeah.
Oh god, I hate. I'm sorry. I'm just gonna come out and say it. I absolutely hate Theon. I think he's sleazy, a slime ball.
Okay, but how is that different from other?
You
characters?
Know, the
says
thing
the
on
girl.
The boat.
Yeah,
because
I'll give you that.
Creepy, and he's so entitled, and that's the difference. Because, you know, the thing, like, all, like, in season one, when, you know, you saw him with like, he has this just deep seated bitterness and entitlement. You could see it in the scene when he was with his dad, and he was just like, "But I'm your son. I'm supposed to lead. I'm blah 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 blah," and. Oh, I think he had it coming. I think that Asha, not Yara, God, still so annoyed they changed her name. I think she, like, she got him, and I'm like, you go, girl.
Icky,
even though it was,
a really underhanded way to have such a, just a brilliant insult on top of him. Like, that was, it was a way to say, hey, listen, I am a chick, and I understand that, but I'm also the king of my sexuality, like you men think you are too.
Yeah. She was totally able to play that game. And get out of it what she wanted to. And she accused him of wearing the skirts. So,
well, he was, yeah.
I guess. I don't know. It was more like a raincoat.
He was like, do you
trend.
I love when Lord Greyjoy says, did you get those clothes with iron or gold? Which, if you guys haven't seen the episode yet, basically he was implying, hey, did you buy those or did you slice someone up and take those from his body? Which is a really fun thing, because we think about fashion nowadays and think about all the clothes that we wear and, like, yada yada yada. Yeah, like,
you guys,
Eric,
don't slice,
maybe we
your clothes.
Eric's
up
been shopping with
bodies.
Me. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
That's like, what we do in
You go out, you buy clothes, and
I
it's
have
cool.
To say, there were no bodies laid to waste when we went out shopping.
There should
Zach.
Have been for that damn place. And
and
you know, what if nowadays? And I say nowadays. What if on our planet, if we're gonna go planetary, interstellar? What if on our planet? And the way we live, our sense of normality, our sense of existence, we thought that it was okay that if we really liked someone's clothes, we could just, like, Baldur's Gate style, kill them and take it. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah. That has happened in the past, though. Like, I guess this
it's like on Castaway when the guy sweeps up on shore and he's like, man, my feet have been hurting because I'm trying to get all this coconut. And he just takes his shoes off of him. He's like, well, he wasn't using them. It's exactly like on Castaway.
I drew that comparison myself.
No, so Lord Greyjoy is basically giving Theon all of this hell because, I mean, he's been with Ned for so long. And like he says, the Starks have had you for longer than I have. So he's afraid that he's gone, air quotes, soft because he sees the people in the North as, you know, whether they be honorable, they're also the people that sort of made it to where he lost his throne. So he's not only pissed and has a grudge, but also at the same time, the Greyjoys and their sort of shippy pirate self, they feel stronger and they feel more badass than X and Y.
They are stronger, really. I mean, if we, from what we heard in this episode, what they have like 100,000 men at their command. So essentially, the Greyjoys are the most.
Here's the problem I have with the TV show. I think is that, you know, when he was approaching on the boat, the Iron Islands, and you know he's looking up into the castle where his dad is. You know, I didn't see anybody else. He gets ashore. There's that one guy who's going to get him a horse. Then he meets his sister. And there's nobody around. They have 100,000 men, but it's not this huge kingdom. It's like these two, like, pillared towers on a rock. They looked completely vacant. They look completely empty. You're talking about a civilization that has, you know, 100,000 people, 100,000 men. They what are they going to be, all malnourished, living in a well somewhere? Like, where are
all
these people?
Well, first of all, they're called the Iron Islands. So I'm sure they're spread out. There's not just Pyke, which is the island that we went to in this episode where Lord Greyjoy lives. And I liked what Selena was saying earlier, though, about Theon having the sense of entitlement, because even as he's on the boat with the boat whore, I guess you could call her. Yeah, getting his scurvy on or whatever, however you want to.
Yeah,
Citrus protects.
He talks
scurvy.
About having this grand reception when he gets, you know, to Pyke, and there's nobody there to greet him. So he's thinking that, oh, I'm the lone son, or living son of Balon Greyjoy, and when I get there, there's going to be this huge reception, and he gets there, and he meets this old guy who, you know, has to get him a horse. So I don't know. I think he thinks too much of himself. I agree that he's a sleazeball, and his story plays out that way.
Yes.
Later on, you may feel somewhat sympathetic towards him. I agree with you. I think that for right now, he is a sleaze. And did you guys notice the one thing that Balon Greyjoy said towards the end of his scene there, where Theon mentions to him that it's impossible for us to take King's Landing, and he says, "Who said anything about King's Landing?"
Yes.
So that should be a little bit of a interesting.
It's a definite flip, you know, because we went into it thinking that Theon was going to grab some numbers for Rob's side, and I almost said our side, because I feel like we kind of naturally align ourselves with the Starks. Am I right here, just viewers of the show in general?
I don't know. I always align myself.
Let's hear it. You got some like counterculture idea. She's like, I really like
so
Daenerys.
I think that's what I'm saying. Oh my god.
I guess I just always
sort of expected when I was reading the books that the story, like the real war, would start when Daenerys came to Westeros, and you know, I kind of had to eat my words on that one.
That's my thought too, especially watching the first season. I was like, you know how like the very last scene was Daenerys and her dragons, and there hasn't been a dragon scene in centuries. The fact that there's a comet in the sky that means dragons. You know, I just thought that Daenerys would be a little bit more central, I guess.
Well, that's like I was saying in episode one. What's going to happen is all of this fighting that we're seeing in the central lands of Westeros and all these people claiming kingship over all of these kingdoms, none of it's going to matter when the dragons rise and the snow falls.
Comes,
you know what I'm saying? It's going to be fire and it's going to be snow.
Oh, it's going to be fire and ice.
Just a lot of fire. Just a lot of fire and ice. There you go.
Ice and fire.
Oh,
ice
there
and
you
fire.
Go.
Oh, my
ice
bad.
And fire.
Yeah. As a tactical advantage, I mean, yeah, sure, but
oh, let's not talk tactics.
Dragons can be killed. I mean, dragons can be killed.
You have
Come
so
on.
Many soldiers on horseback. I wonder if one dragons. Of them have a Dovahkiin. That'd be great. That's a Skyrim joke.
Well, three dragons, right? Aren't there three?
Yeah.
So there were three eggs. Yeah, I can't wait. I want more Daenerys.
Mm-hmm. All right, Selena, what did you think when Daenerys had to face with one of her riders coming back beheaded? Did you feel sorry for her? Since we know that you're the big Daenerys ship.
I just shipped Daenerys.
That's
yes.
it.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, I felt even worse for her servant girl, I guess. Even though, again, that was another thing that wasn't really in the books. Yeah, that was terrible.
Now, she cried unlike anyone I've ever heard cry. I mean, she was pretty sad. Yeah. If you guys
have you ever seen
episode.
Anyone, like, beheaded?
Not personally. Yeah,
maybe you would, too.
It echoed off the mountains, though. It was that loud, right?
Yeah, that's what
I'm
saying.
Should they bring all the Blood Riders to them now, you know?
Yeah, she should just take care of all that. And they're still thirsty.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why that didn't make sense for me, and again, I agree with you, Selena, I don't remember it being in the books, is because if there was another Khalasar, right, that close to send a horse back with somebody's head in it, you would think that they would be close enough to be attacked.
That's what I was thinking. How about just send back a bomb with it? You know what I mean? Something crazy.
That's why I don't remember it from the books. This is not a huge spoiler. I mean, they're not attacked by any other group prior to them arriving wherever they go. So that's why I thought it was a little weird. The horse isn't going to know where to go unless like their enemies are, you know, a couple hundred yards away.
I just want to know who's siding with who, because we've got the Greyjoys getting crazy and just saying, hey, we're going to fight everyone because we're just pissed at everyone because no one's cool pirates like us. But then you've got Stannis and you've got Davos, and Davos like, listen, man, pirate friend, here's what we're going to do.
Salador. What's the guy's name? I love him.
Salador. So Davos recruits Salador and all of his pirate mateys, and they're all going to line
Yar.
Up with Stannis. Yar, exactly. So are they going to meet in battle outside of King's Landing and decide who's going to sack King's Landing, or are they going to join
Maybe.
Forces? And how do those people meet up with Robb Stark? How do those people meet up with the two, we'll just call them the Baratheon two that are fighting? You know what I mean? Like, there's so many different factions that are coming off on this city. Like, can we just agree that King's Landing, be it as it may, has a great view? It definitely isn't worth every single person.
Do you guys find it confusing? You know, like as like haven't read the series. Do you think that there are too many sides? Like, is it hard to follow, or is it just really cool?
I think it's perfect.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's really great that we have a story that is, you know, pulling our emotions in so many different ways.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, like I said, is forfeit to what the greater, you know, what the greater goal of the entire story is, which is to create even more mass confusion on top of all that.
Yeah, but I think it can be confusing, though.
Yeah, I'm confused.
You know, was it Catelyn says, now there's a king in every corner, and then in this episode, Cersei, when Tyrion reads the letter, isn't it from the old bear, that they need more men for the Night's Watch? And Mance Rayder comes up, and what is she says something along the lines, oh, is that five kings now that we have because he's the king beyond the wall?
Right.
You know, it's a lot to take in, and that's why I think, going back to what you said, Selena, about the first episode, it being kind of slow, I agree with you, and I also said in the last episode it was short in terms of season premieres, but I do think it was a little slow, and I think it's because they have to set it up all over because they do have so many new characters. That's just what I think, though.
I think they're going to be setting this season upwards into the fourth or fifth episode for sure. And it's kind of what they did last season, honestly. Mm-hmm. A lot of rising and then a whole lot of falling action, and then them not keeping it constrained to a few episodes. The entire series sort of has an overall arc on top of each character's supporting arc, if you see what I'm saying.
Let's talk about pathetic characters then. What about Ross?
She's not pathetic. That was so
She's
sad what's his face did to her.
Baelish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, what Baelish did to her was amazing.
Oh,
I have to say,
like
that was the scariest, like, moment for her. That was, like, I just had so much, like, you know, I just love that scene where he, like, scares her into. But still, like, where's that going?
But that's,
you know, is what I was
thinking.
That's
a good question, because, like, the whole Roz storyline, obviously, she does not exist in the books. And when they decided,
like, not at all. Because she's like the main
exactly,
whore.
Exactly, she's the alpha whore.
She's the alpha whore.
You guys
yeah.
said. And yeah. like the fact that they chose to introduce her last season to so, and they, I think the writer said something about using her to track the story in some way. But that's really interesting for us who know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen to Roz. I assume she's going to die in some horrible way, but we don't know when. It's exciting.
Well, I think that's probably a safe assumption.
It could be worse. Like, if she didn't die, she could be sold, like Baelish was saying, like, you know, couldn't find out how to make this other girl
She's kind of like she's kind of like the Mary Sue of Game of Thrones. She went from Winterfell to King's Landing. They're probably going to sell her off, and she's going to end up like with Daenerys for a while, and then she's going to travel to like somewhere else. And I don't know.
Yeah,
she's a very traveled lady.
She's not in the book. I mean, she is in the books, but she's not in the books to this extent, right?
When is she in the books?
Do you remember that one scene with Tyrion?
Oh, scene in the first book or something.
I just assumed that he would be with the Awful Whore at one point in the book.
Well, he's Theon's whore. She's Theon's whore.
Oh, spoiler. Sorry, guys. It's actually a man.
This whole scene with Lord Baelish just kind of took me back a little bit about how graphic this series is sometimes. I mean, you have... Well, come on, not that bad. You have one guy coming out and said, I barely touched her, she started to cry. And then this other girl walking the other way, he snaps his fingers, she comes, he cleans her up real fast.
That was
disgusting.
And then
sends him through. Oh. Sends him through, and then she freaking kisses the guy.
I mean, what does she care? I mean...
Yeah, that was
yeah,
heavy.
It's those scenes in the brothel are, you know, probably the
biggest
ones.
HBO.
Yeah, this episode there was a lot of fucking.
Yeah,
going
they
on.
Came back strong with that because in the pilot, I think
surprisingly no ice.
Yeah, there was not a lot in the first episode, and I was like, "Ooh, they've toned it down."
HBO.
But,
yeah.
HBO's.
HBO.
HBO's. They're great.
And initially talked to her, was I thought, wow, you know, he really. He's going to have this sincere side and sit down and talk to her and make her feel better. And then I started to watch it, and then he says this line, those with the most power have the poorest grace. And then he goes, I hate bad investments. And I'm thinking, God, what a dick. I mean, seriously, this guy, this girl's going through so much right now.
No.
And
But it wasn't her kid who died.
When
we got into it, I thought,
for?
Okay, no, really, though, because I was like, it's not even
her
kid
who lost her baby.
Yeah, it's her whore friend, guys.
Her friend lost her baby. Like, it's not hers, though. I'm like, why you gotta interfere with business, girl?
Yeah, girl, you know, come on, girl.
Bad investment, girl.
I'm trying to make money, girl.
Baelish scaring her into, you know, continuing her work. Let's just call it that. Was... a tactic. He doesn't make him a good person, but damn, was that fun to watch.
I don't know. I just didn't think it was in character for him. Maybe that was my problem
with
it.
But isn't he like the master, the puppet master here, like of the whole thing?
Oh yeah.
I mean, isn't so? What part of it wasn't in character?
Well, I think if he was lying about that thing with the other whore that he was talking about, then it was in character because then he was manipulating her. But if that actually happened, I just felt like the impression that I have of his character, that's not who he is. Like, he's sleazy and he's manipulative, but he's not cruel.
The fact of the matter is, the alpha whore sets an example for the rest of his workers, right? No, seriously.
Yeah.
He can't have her crying and, you know, essentially... not being able to please a high-paying customer just because it's her whim. It's her job. When you have personal problems, you go into work, you shut it off, you clock in, you clock out. And that's all he's asking of her. It's like, hey, I pay you. I paid for you. You live here. You live, you know, free, blah, blah, blah. You drink wine and you eat cheese and grapes all the time. Earn your keep and quit crying about some bullshit. You know what I mean?
It's
that's
her
basically
profession.
What he was saying. Yeah.
They have a union, don't they?
It's like what if we decided, oh, I'm so sick, my latte burned the roof of my mouth this morning, I can't be on Game of Thrones. Like, how is the show going to go on if one of us decides to step away? You
yeah,
know
we'd
I mean?
Be like, shut the hell up and do the show, or we're going to send you off to get molested.
Go to Bath.
Go to Bath.
Get molested in Bath. No, and we made Terrence join Selena just for protective purposes over in Bath, and it went fine. You see what I'm saying, though? It was very, in my opinion, it was very in character because at the end of the day, he is a he is a strong guy inside of a weak guy's body, and he's very smart, and he just doesn't want his business crashing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Strong guy in a weak guy's body.
The best way to stay on top of your business and not let anything crumble is to pay attention to each small aspect. He can't let his alpha whore start crying and not pleasing people. You know what I'm saying?
Especially when the guy complained directly to him about it. You know?
Yeah, that's some shit.
But he had a heart. He had a heart to heart. He took her aside, and they had a heart.
Yeah,
to heart.
And then he gave her the day off. So you know, there you go.
That's the way. He did give her. He did give her the day off. Come on, he wasn't like, you got to snap right to it right now. He gave her the day
off.
Was
it paid leave though?
I mean, probably. I mean, like I said, that's a pretty lavish place. You know what I mean? Like she could be really poor. This is back in a society where there's a 1% and then there's a 99%, and she's chilling in the 1% just because she's, you know, cute. You know,
way to make it relevant.
Yeah,
Occupy
know.
Well, there was another one of those. There was another one of those scenes, though, too, that we haven't talked about yet.
Ooh, Melisandre. I thought it was cruel, man. She was playing on his manliness. You know, his whole. She was like, your wife, she ain't produced nothing. She's ill. She doesn't give you anything. Man, I'm going to give you a son. And he was like, oh, I got to mount you. You know, but like, that was not.
We can tell Eric just got a shamrock shake, hey, guys?
Man.
Scene, though, that I was wondering. First of all, I'm pretty sure in the books that he has a daughter. And second,
he does, yeah.
Did you get the impression that they were actually sleeping together?
In the book?
Like,
beforehand?
In the books.
No, because that's not who he is. I mean, I don't think he's very interested in that. I mean, he's married and he has a daughter, but I just don't think that interests him at all. I think he's very sort of focused on.
He's pious. Like, the whole point of Stannis is that he's honorable and he is like focused, and the whole honor thing is so important to him. You know, like the entire reasoning for wanting to take power is because he believes that he is the one who rightfully should, you know, and it's not about making, he doesn't want to make compromises because it's not right. And the whole point of him always needing to do the right thing, I felt, was like kind of undermined by him just falling into bed with Melisandre. I was kind of shocked by that. Falling into the table.
Falling onto the map with Hulse.
Falling onto the battle map.
I don't
it looks
know.
Like Settlers of Catan
I can't
is what
believe,
they were having
I can't believe that George R. R. Martin kind of... I guess, you know, that's just again, we need to add some sex because it's HBO. But
well, do you think... Yeah, because clearly there's not enough sex.
His character, clearly. I think.
Well, do you think that they're trying to make him more interesting?
Probably.
Because then when his brother comes... Well, no, because when his brother comes and is like, I'm flashy, everybody loves me, which is exactly what he says in the promo that I saw. You know, comes up, then maybe the audience will side with Stannis instead, because otherwise he's just kind of like this duty-driven older guy, more like a Ned Stark, but the audience is kind of afraid to trust another Ned Stark, because the old one got his head cut off. Like,
he's not supposed to be likable.
Well, he even says... He says he has a wife, but then 5 seconds later, he's like, literally, it's like he doesn't care, which you're right, is not his character. And you know, forgive me, but does this happen
in the
book?
No, it doesn't happen
in
the book.
I don't specifically remember. Unless they're trying to do is set up that scene later on where she, I don't know.
Right.
I'm not gonna give it away, but.
Oh, you already did. You already did. Man.
All right. No spoilers in Game of Thrones,
she says,
guys.
I'm pregnant.
Point, Mike, actually.
Well,
like, oh, it's fine.
There's a scene like that, but I'm not gonna give it away.
It's
but
not
unless
what you
they're
think.
Trying to give reason behind how that happens,
you know,
and
I haven't read this far, so I'm not gonna spoil anything. But what if she actually does have a son? Wouldn't that mean that that person is the true heir to the Iron Throne?
Well, that would be a
no.
Unless he killed,
or there's an older. I just gotta keep my mouth shut.
Yeah. Okay.
Can we all just agree that there is no longer an heir to the Iron Throne?
No.
Okay. Can we all just cross that bridge? So as the baby killing spree continues, the Kingsguard approaches what may yet not be, and what is definitely not a baby, but a grown man that is hanging out.
He was a baby once,
but he's now hanging out with the whole group of ragtag individuals headed up to the wall, including our favorite character, Ari. who is actually not Arya at all, who's actually Arya, and she's hanging out with him, and they're gathering limbs, they're gathering timber, and then the King's Guard slowly approaches the camp.
Yorin did some imp slapping.
Yeah.
In that
Yorin
scene.
did a few imp slaps.
He did. He was awesome.
I was impressed with Yorin's behavior.
Yeah, Yorin has a pretty big scene there, and I like the fact that he was able to essentially separate the Night's Watch from everybody else in terms of the King's rule. And he's saying, we don't answer to you, essentially,
right.
So piss off.
Right.
Which was really nice.
Yeah, that was a really good scene. And it was so good to see Gendry and see him establish that thing with Arya. I absolutely love the whole Arya-Gendry storyline in the books.
I thought it was great when Arya was like, hey, listen, they're out looking for me and you. Turns out, also, I'm a lady of the court. And he was like, oh, shit, I wish I wouldn't have been asking you about the whole cock thing earlier. Like... you know what I mean? Like, I thought that was such a great little just triangle that they're creating between the what she could be, what she is, and what but he is, and also what he doesn't know he is.
Yeah,
man, she has to trust him now with that secret. You know, it puts her in a slightly compromised situation, but not more so than the King's Guard showing up and asking, you know, for the boy either.
And that's fantastic for her because she has such a hard time trusting people, you know, and she sort of Arya is like the ultimate, you know, on her own character. And the fact that she has someone like Gendry who is, you know, bigger and stronger and a man, which does help, you know, in that world.
He's got a sweetheart,
and a man.
So that's nice.
He does, which helps. And you know, he's very, very handsome.
If I knew they were looking for me based on my helmet, I would give my helmet to somebody else. Or I would throw it in the river. Like, seriously, if that's your only defining feature, oh, it's a boy with a bull helmet. Get rid of the helmet.
Stubborn.
Like, I'm sorry. Get rid of the helmet. Mm. You see what they did to his dad? They had his dad's face against the ash. Like,
it was his dad, Eric.
He's guardian, okay? He's guardian. Let me just say, okay? The smith. There we go.
Right? The smith. The smithy.
The smith. Okay. They put his face to the flames, man.
So Yorin would technically, with his outburst toward the Kingsguard and his swift sword pulling and directing toward the groin, would you say that Yorin has put himself in the running for this week's second weekly Game of Owns Owner of the Week?
Yes.
Right? Would you say he's putting himself in that running? Okay, well, who else?
Mm.
Okay, if we've got Yorin being a BA, who else do we have?
Oh, Salador San, which is awesome.
God,
comment.
Oh,
what was
that?
Awesome.
He goes, listen,
the Queen Regent.
He goes, listen, I didn't say anything about raping her.
Yeah.
And he was like, wait, so what you're saying is you can pull this off? He's like, I don't believe you. And he's like, that's because I ain't never tried to have sex with you before. So swag.
I don't think he's gonna. You know, when that thing was, you know, airing on the show, I just thought, man, he's not gonna get within 15 feet of Cersei, man. She's gonna see him coming and have his like leg cut off.
He's
or
like
something.
A young Kingsley Shacklebolt.
Salador's got style.
He's just not gonna.
He does have style.
He's not gonna.
Can I throw a virus in? I actually wrote this quote down because it was badass. It's when him and Tyrion are at the door. And he said, the storms come and go, the big fish eat the little fish, and I keep on paddling. When Tyrion was talking about, you know, stay out of my business or I'll have your head cut off.
Yeah.
I just saw this image of him paddling.
Oh,
like, trying
that's
to
terrible.
Afloat, like,
with all his little perfumes around him. That's terrible.
I was just like, that's... No, I don't see... But the only thing I thought was more badass than Yorin was Daenerys. When she saw the head cut off, and of was it Karras?
Rakaras?
What's his name?
Rakaras.
Something like that?
Kasar. Akaras. Yeah. The blood of her blood. She sees his head cut off, and, you know, she says, you know, this isn't anything compared to what, you know, that
Hells
guy's going to look
yeah.
like when I'm through with them. You know?
I'm such a mean like, girl.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
so mad.
I was just like, and she's like no position to threat, because, you know, they're like still, they have no water, they have no supplies or anything, and she's like, man, I am avenging this guy, man, they're gonna look
she's
like
wearing like van slip-ons
like
she's
I know
so
that
mad.
There's like really sort of I guess polarizing views in the fandom of about Daenerys, but I think she's badass. Like, I think she's so cool. Like, She's one of the... I don't know.
How can you not?
Don't ask me.
Micah, what do you think of Daenerys?
She's such a victim.
Got no problem with her.
What? No. Fine. Micah's fine with her.
I'm watching her right now. Sorry. Did you say something?
Have you thrown into the sea whenever he was talking to Varys, as we just mentioned. So.
Nice.
Yeah. I like how they keep mentioning Ned Stark. It's like he's still alive.
Yeah,
Ned Stark
matters.
Will never be gone. So as long as those who remain are alive. All
right. I would say probably, I think the biggest own of the week would be how, I guess I don't really know what to call her now. Yara or Asha. We'll just call her Miss Thing.
How Miss Thing
totally leads Theon on.
Yeah.
Just so in that throne room, she can be like, gotcha, bitch.
She's like, awesome. Absolutely awesome.
It was so beautifully mm-hmm. done. And I think there were a couple great moments in this episode. But I think that, honestly, above all, like that really stands
that
out.
That actress, props to that actress. She did an amazing job.
Yeah. That or when Craster knocks Johnson across the face at the end of the episode.
Well, also,
that was a pretty blatant
there's an emote whore. And she goes, Father will punish me. He will call me a whore. And then he goes, I haven't paid you. So that was awesome. Yeah.
And with that, guys, everyone who's listening to the show right now, once again, thank you guys so much for listening. We're on our third episode now, and as we said at the beginning of the episode, we have successfully crossed the line, which is making it into iTunes' little new and noteworthy section. So,
what?
So if you're an iTunes staffer and you're listening to this show right now and you would like perhaps a private store of Advil, Meldeer, Box, we can make that happen. Just let us know.
But that's only if you're listening to the other Game of Thrones podcast, not us. You wouldn't need Advil for us.
Exactly. If you'd like... We know we're only on our third episode, but we hope that we're slowly climbing the ranks inside of your hearts. And maybe we'll even be toward the top at one of these times. What's the easiest place to listen to our
iTunes,
podcast?
Definitely.
I would guess just iTunes. You know,
definitely subscribe.
Yeah. Searching for Game of Owns, and obviously you can find each episode placed strategically on HypeBubble.com, and if you look closely enough, you can also find them at GameofOwns.com. And on top of that, we all have very prolific Twitters that I'm sure you can get behind if you'd like to follow. We tweet out of context things. We tweet things that really have nothing to do with Game of Thrones a whole lot, because guess what? Unfortunately, at this time, Game of Owns is still just a small part of what we're all doing, right, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Can I just add one more thing to the show, because I don't think it's been brought up at all?
Sure.
Hodor.
I was thinking when you were talking about the guy in the cell talking in the third person, I was thinking Hodor.
God, Eric still doesn't know who Hodor is, which is really sad.
Hodor.
Obviously, we'd like to hear from you guys, and by hear from you, we mean shoot us a tweet, shoot us an email. You can reach us at, well, right now, Eric has strategically written, and now it's getting highlighted inside the Google Doc, but you can reach us at staffofowns@gameofowns.com or the more traditional way, which is contact@gameofowns.com. And we do want to know what you guys have chosen for your own personal owns of the week, and that means every single little thing that you've chosen, and that includes all the things that we have chosen. If perhaps there's something that didn't quite make our list that you guys have seen and chosen on your own, either way, let us know via Twitter.
All the support that you've shown us by rating the podcast and writing a little something nice about what you've heard.
Yeah.
In addition to at Game of Owns, you can follow at MJTBAUM.
I'm at Zach Louis.
I am at Selena Wilkin. And you can also follow at Hypeable.
And I am at Spielerman.
Or Terrence, U.S.
Guess what? All those descriptions might have been superfluous, because if you look strategically inside of this news post that you're probably listening to this episode on, there may or may not be links to those Twitter accounts themselves. So be sure to do that. It's been super nice having the full panel back together. Are you guys excited for next week's episodes? Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah.
Super excited. Oh, yeah. I hope it gets leaked early. Wouldn't that be cool to see an episode of Game of Thrones before it airs on Sunday?
Oh, we would never do that.
We would never, ever, awesome. Ever do that.
Keep on winter
Filling.
Coming, Filling. Y'all.
That's what I was
wondering.
We
have a lot of outtakes for this week.
Since when does someone from Sweden ever say y'all?
Goodbye, guys.
Once again, thanks for listening to this week's Game of Owns, guys. We will see you next week.